Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with Repack, supporting the circular economy and reducing the impact of packaging on the environment.
In the Green Scene today, doing greener laundry with bio-inspired filters. We'll have microplastic solutions in your laundry too. But first, why saving microbes may be the most important conservation effort ever. I'm joined by Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland. Ruth, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Saving the microbes.
I know, and it's not a slogan that maybe has as
save
much...
Save the whale, save the dolphin.
Exactly,
that's
the panda.
Yeah,
and even the bee, sort of, we've got down to some of the insects now. We understand how important they are for agriculture. But an international team of microbiologists and conservation scientists have got together to publish the first global roadmap for microbial conservation. And when we talk about microbes, we're talking about bacteria, we're talking about fungi and viruses, other microorganisms, and we're talking about a trillion different species. And of course, as you say, when we talk about things like viruses and bacteria, often we don't have the most positive feelings about those species. But it's really, really, this is actually a really interesting and important paper that's been published, because it sort of articulates the issue and then comes up with a plan.
I mean, a simple thing is if you take antibiotics, for example, your own microbiome gets affected. It doesn't work properly.
Exactly. So we have, as you say, in recent years, we've got to understand how important, you know, those 30 trillion microbes that live in each of us, how important they are. But the same is true in really every ecosystem. So one of the fascinating things in this paper was about one bacterial species called Prochlorococcus, which most of us have never heard of. And it lives in the sea. It's a marine bacterium. It's the most abundant photosynthetic organism on Earth. And for every breath we take, one in five of our breaths, the oxygen is produced by this one microbe in the ocean, more than all the plants on Earth. So it really does underline how important it is. Our soil is held together by microbes. So we all know that smell after the rain, that's produced by a family, petrichor. That smell is produced by a family of bacteria called Acinomyces. And many of our drugs have been found in that family of bacteria that keep our soil healthy. So they are absolutely critical, these bacteria. So what are we going to do about it? And they've come up with a sort of 5-point plan. And the first thing is, of course, we don't even know some of these species. You know, there's trillions of them and they're evolving all the time. So what the scientists say, we need to identify hotspots and we need to identify places where there are unique microbes and think about how we protect the habitats where these microbes live. And of course, you know, we have some of those unique habitats like peatlands here in Ireland. But even when we protect certain habitats, we often don't think about the microbes. We're thinking about the plants and the bigger species. So what they're saying now is when we think about preserving a habitat, we need to have a kind of section of the plan that thinks about microbial diversity that might be living in that habitat.
I mean, do we know the role and function of each of these things? I mean, how they play into the food chain? It's all about eating and procreating and surviving, isn't it?
Yeah, and of course, there's so many niches where they've evolved to do particular, to play particular roles. You know, whether it is, as you say, metabolizing different compounds in soils or in the ocean or carbon or, you know, acting in symbiosis with corals. I mean, the color that we get in corals when they're bleached, that's actually because the microbes have been damaged in those corals. So of course, we need to think about that. And back to that idea of, you know, law and regulation, microbes are essentially invisible when it comes to conservation law and policy. And of course, there's an issue around then, if some of them are valuable, who owns them? So we need to start thinking about, when we think about habitats and then maybe even going on, like we have seed banks to protect plants, you know, we might need to think about, you know, DNA sequencing, you know, actually finding out where these microbes are and potentially coming up with ways to preserve them, maybe frozen microbe banks that we can come back later, even if we don't fully understand them now, that we have at least protected their genetics.
How complex are they?
Well, they can be very complex. I mean, there's a whole range of, as I said, it goes everything from very simple, you know, viruses, which might be just one strand of mRNA in a kind of simple shell, all the way through to, you know, algaes and photosynthetic bacteria. So there's a huge range here, which is why I guess it's been so daunting to think about protecting them. And undoubtedly, this paper isn't the answer, but it's been a really important sort of message to say many people associate microbes with kind of disease or maybe with agriculture, yeast, but really they do so much more for us. So we need to understand them better.
So for example, if we keep polluting the seas as we do, and we'll be talking about laundry in a few minutes' time, if we keep doing that and we kill off those little fellas that are generating all this oxygen for us.
And they're very heat sensitive as well. So if we keep warming the oceans, we're essentially, you know, we all often think about the Amazon as the lungs of the planet, and we're, you know, there's issues there where it's becoming a carbon source rather than a sink. But we need to look at all of these things. So really, you know, this idea of focusing on the big stuff might be fundamentally flawed. Mm. You know, we can't just focus on the big stuff. We need to think about what is it that we depend on? What is it that the planet's whole sort of fabric is held together with? And actually, microbes are at the very heart of that, whether it's the whole web in the ocean or in our soils or in our forests.
Now, we want to talk about laundry and how we can make our laundry greener.
I know a lot of us are back to you know, lots of washing as the school kicks off again and all the sports kick off again. And we know that laundry releases microplastics. And we all have heard that microplastics are now found everywhere from breast milk to the top of Mount Everest and even inside our brains. And it's a real cause for concern. And the average household is producing a couple of hundred grams, maybe 500 grams of microplastic just from the water that comes out of your washing machine as your clothes get tumbled around. So researchers in Germany at the Fraunhofer Institute and the University of Bonn decided to look at how we could filter this water out better. And most filters, as sort of engineers know, they just clog. So when we create a sieve-like filter, when enough particles get trapped...
If it's doing its job, it's going to clog,
exactly. Yeah. So they went and said, well, where in nature do we find filters that never clog? And they said, what about a fish gill? Because, of course, fish spend their whole life sucking water into their mouths, and their gills filter the water through, and all the particles are captured there and they can separate out the water from the particles. So they looked at fish gills, which don't act like flat sieves. They act like a series of cones. And the cones are angled in a very particular way so that as the water moves through, the fluid dynamics means that the flow remains constant and particles are sort of shunted off to the side, a bit like a slip road in a motorway, but traffic keeps moving all the time. So they used what they knew about fish gills, and they used machine learning and AI to come up with a whole series of different models, and they built these filters based on fish gills. And what they found was they could remove 99% of microplastics from a washing machine type apparatus. So this is a huge...
And it just parks this stuff in a container.
It creates a little kind of pellet. And actually, they created a valve system where the pellets can be sort of moved out of the filter. Mm. So you might only have to change that, you know, take the pellet out and put it in your normal waste, maybe every 30 or 40 washes. So very doable.
Yeah.
So this kind of opens up the way for the EU to say, look, we're now going to insist that this kind of technology exists in washing machines and appliances that use water.
So the next generation.
Exactly, the next generation. This is a really interesting innovation, and it's you know, biomimicry inspired by nature.
And it doesn't sound like it's an expensive device.
I don't think it will be, because it's sort of the design that is really key here, that is so clever. And they found, you know, the angle was critical. You know, it was around 19 degrees was the angle, but if they went to 22 degrees, it didn't work. So it was all about getting it just
now,
right.
Now, what about drying clothes, tumble dryer?
I know, and tumble dryers often seen as the sort of a bete noir of the sort of sustainability world. And again, tumble dryers in their vents produce airborne microplastics. If you have a condenser dryer, it ends up in the water again. And this is research that was another paper that was done by Northumbria University and Procter & Gamble. And it's always important to say when industry are co-funding the research. And what they found, and you might say, well, they probably would want to find that, was that fabric softeners and dryer sheets reduced the amount of microplastics. Essentially, if the fibres were softer and there was less static electricity, just there was less friction in the machine and fewer fibres were found. So, I mean, look, a lot of scientists commenting on this paper said there's other issues. You're introducing chemical pollution and waste if you're doing those things. It's not the long-term win, but it just reminds us to think our tumble dryers are also producing waste. If they have a vent towards our house, it's probably getting into our air.
And you could use a dehumidifier. Many people have discovered the joys of the dehumidifier.
You could, and look, people aren't maybe going to do it switch at this time of year, but in the summer, just getting the clothes out in the line, even though it's a bit more work, it's probably the best route for the environment.
Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland. Ruth, thank you very much.
Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with Repack, supporting the circular economy and reducing the impact of packaging on the environment.